today on Ag News Daily.
Toot toot method. What you do is you pull up in a farmer's driveway, or not driveway, but their barnyard, and you have your arm hanging out the window, Delaney, right? Your cap, you got your cap. Absolutely no curve in the...
Good afternoon and happy Friday, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Delaney Howell, one of the hosts for the Ag News Daily podcast. Mike is on the road today. So we're going to be joined by guest co-host Brent Carlson of the Dryline Farmer podcast. Brent, how are you doing today? We got that Texas Tech win last night. You excited?
That was completely off the hook. The first 12 minutes of that game, there were more runs scored in the Texas Rangers-Chicago Cub game than there were points scored in that Texas Tech-Michigan game.
It was so slow. I was like, okay, this is going to be a good game. We're going to have a lot of action. No.
The most action in the first half was the constant blackout of the signal.
I know. Yeah, they were having some problems, it sounded like, on CBS end.
CBS, yeah. It was people were all being and moaning about it on Facebook and stuff. So
my signal was fine the whole time, so I don't know what they were complaining about.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe it was because we've got DirecTV. Maybe it was a satellite thing. I don't know. But, yeah, I didn't really – and I don't remember. I think I fell asleep with about 5 minutes left. So,
I didn't make it through the whole game. But I woke up this morning to a text from my dad saying, guns up, Texas Tech is in the Elite Eight. So that's exciting.
So I just – on a related note, I just saw some – whatever you want to call them on Twitter – I don't know if they were a Texas Tech alum or not, but they were saying Texas Tech needs to abandon the Matador thing because Matadors kill bulls for sport. And his handle was Future Londoner. I'm like, dude, you need to go ahead and move there. Which is ironic. That's the country next door to the country, or not next door, but across across the river from the country that actually does that. So
right.
a little irony in that cat's whole spiel there.
Interesting.
So, yeah. But long live the Matadors, nonetheless.
Nice. All right. Well, we've got March Madness going on, of course. Brent, what's going on in the world of agricultural news? How soon are you guys to getting into the field? Because I know we got some big government reports today talking about planting 2019.
Well, we were going to plant this morning up until about 11 o'clock. And then we just, put everything back in the barn because, when corn is on a lower range than soybeans, it kind of puts you in a bad mood. But no, down here, we actually got a pretty good rain, especially for us, a couple weeks ago, and we had anywhere from 0.6 to 2 inches, which for us is, that's a pretty good spell. So we're going to start, we usually start planting corn about the 20th of April, 25th of April, and so we're starting to get all our pivots serviced, and we're killing weeds, spraying weeds, and doing all that good kind of stuff, kind of servicing tractors, and so we'll be going before we know it. It's already the end of March, I don't know why I looked at my watch. I know it's the end of March.
Yeah, April 1st is Monday, which is crazy to think.
It is, and of course, a lot of as far as that market goes, I guess I always forget about the end of the month things, the end of quarter things. So I guess it's just coincidence that the market report came out on the end of month, end of quarter, but.
Yeah, let's dive through this report really quick here. So the big shock, which ticked the corn market off today, obviously, was we got more expected planted acres of corn, expecting to see 92.8 million acres, which was up from the last estimate, expecting to see 84.6 million acres of soybeans, which is a 5% drop from last year. And then wheat acres were also forecast a little bit down, at 45.8 million acres.
That's a lot of acres. But I was really concerned about Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont. Maine was down 1,000 acres, and they completely missed Vermont and New Hampshire. They were down 2,000 and 1,000 respectively. So the market completely discounted that loss of acres in the New England corn states.
They don't seem like big markets to me, Brent.
Well, everybody has their own relative size in the corn market here. I mean, come on, Ohio, that's closer to the Corn Belt, and it had zero change. And this is all courtesy of the American Farm Bureau calculations. But I'm really concerned nobody's taken into account that New England corn crop. It's really really important to me because I remember going up there when I was an intern in Washington, D.C. And on another side note, to tell you how small of a world it is, you had Kerry Rinker on yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
We actually interned in the same office in Washington, D.C. back in 2002.
What did you do in Washington, D.C.?
We were both interns for Congressman Kevin Brady.
Huh.
And he's the he was the chairman of the Ways and Means Committee.
Mm-hmm.
Until they lost the majority. But he's out of College Station and Houston, part of the Houston area. And we, of course, Carrie was an Aggie, and so she got in that office. But we both interned there in his office, and so we gave tours of the Capitol building and, you know, talked to constituents and all that good kind of stuff. So that was a lot of fun. But, yeah, I noticed she was on your podcast yesterday.
Yeah, that's a small world.
It was a small world after all. So, yeah. But, no, when we were up in D.C., I had my pickup, and we drive around up there, and We went to New York City one time, and we went to Ocean City, Maryland one time, and driving across that area, I didn't see a field bigger than maybe 2 acres.
Wow.
And anyway, I talked to somebody later, a few years later, that was from there, and they said, yeah, we had, I don't know, 200 acres and like 50 landlords. And that sounded like a nightmare.
Yeah, that would be. So maybe that is a pretty big shift in acreage then for that area.
Percentage-wise, yeah. I mean, come on, 1,000 acres in Maine? That's probably like a 50% swing for that state.
Hmm.
I bet the basis kind of sucks, but, yeah. You know. Not as bad as maybe North Dakota, but yeah, as far as serious notes in the state by state, North Dakota, South Dakota, they were up, let's see, that can't be right. It says 900,000 and that's not right. Well, maybe it is. Anyway, so yeah, the big numbers in the Midwest were pretty stout, at least the estimates. So yeah.
But the thing that I keep saying is, they surely can't know yet what they're going to get for acreage in, especially in Nebraska.
Nebraska's a lake.
I know.
Yeah. Nebraska's a lake, and I'm sure probably part of Missouri has got to be a lake,
oh,
and
yeah.
Maybe even Iowa.
Yeah.
What's it like? Are you in that? Are you east of that?
I'm east of that about 2 hours, but I was over there on Monday, and it's a lake. I mean, western Iowa, like central western Iowa is a lake. All the way over into Nebraska, and then from the Nebraska border north to south, it's, like, completely wet. Even parts of Missouri, northern Missouri, are wet. South Dakota is still wet. So I feel like, I mean, obviously the markets reacted to today's reports, but how much does today's report really matter in the grand scheme of things?
Right. You know, we talked about, could it be a combination of being end of the quarter, end of the month? But, and I mean, it was really, and I'm, this is... I guess it, we're closed now just a couple minutes ago,
mm-hmm.
But I noticed, unless it made new lows since we started talking, it hit that low back in, I don't know if it's 2 months ago or whatever, but down at about 385-ish. So I'm wondering if that might be a holding point. At least I hope it is.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think we're still waiting really to factor in the whole flood thing. Because we still don't know 100% the damage that's done. We're still seeing estimates there. Mike is actually over in western Iowa today. Former Secretary of Iowa, Bill Northey, who's now an undersecretary, of course, at the USDA, was touring around parts of Iowa and Nebraska today. And he was going to be making some comments in regards to what rural America could expect. Hopefully what they can expect as far as emergency payments go, and just offering his insight into what's going on. We also saw that the USDA's FSA office, state executive director for the state of Nebraska, announced that folks can use CRP ground now until April 30th to use as grazing purposes, since obviously there's a lot of wetland that folks can't use to turn livestock out onto. They're also working to put in new disaster assistance package programs for farmers and ranchers, but we really don't have any concrete answers yet.
Yeah, that's real true. I mean, the unforeseen things are going to show up. I mean, these fields, not only are they underwater when they dry out, the foreign materials that are, I mean, the literal foreign bulk
mm-hmm.
materials that are going to floating through there, where it's driftwood, they actually have trees up there, you know,
right.
Let alone the silt and the, you know, no telling what kind of fertilizers or pesticides, you know, may have leached away. So to really get this stuff back into a tillable condition is I mean, that's the biggest misnomer there is right now. So that's pretty concerning. I listened to a farmer that was interviewed on another podcast this week, and it was interesting. And you may have heard this. He said, you know, the main reason they flooded is because the ground was frozen where he was. Mm-hmm. It was like 4 feet. Was it 4 feet down? It was frozen.
Right.
So it was basically raining on a statewide size of parking lot.
Yeah.
And there was nowhere to soak it up.
Yeah, so that's what I have been hearing as well.
That's pretty interesting. We don't have that. We were 85 yesterday here.
What?
So yeah, and we were
moving to Texas.
Come on down. It's we've got some room. We've got some room here, but yeah, it was 85 yesterday, and then I got a warning on my phone last night that we're supposed to have a red flag warning today, which you know is the high winds and low humidity. Woke up
could
this morning.
Could be tornado then, or what?
No, just winds, straight line winds and no humidity. But we woke up this morning and it was about 44 degrees and drizzle. So apparently the I guess there was a storm system or a frontal boundary that moved in earlier than they thought. So which I mean the red flag warning said possible winds of 20 to 30. That's like we could play badminton in that weather. I mean, we just got through the windiest day I think we've had in probably, maybe 100 years, 2 weeks, 2-3 weeks ago when it blew 60-mile-an-hour sustained winds with a gust. We had a gust of 80 here right where we live. So windiest day I've ever seen in my life without even thinking about it. It was pretty wild. And then last week, our hometown, it had we got hail here at the house. We're about 10 miles north of Hereford, but they had ping pong and some baseball-sized hail there in town. So we talked about this on the podcast this week, about all the salespeople that showed up on it's amazing the combination these guys are. They're hail dent removal guys, roof guys. I'm surprised they're not insurance guys, too. But so Casey Seymour and I covered all the corn acres, of all these sales strategies, and I asked him and interviewed him on the strategy that he might implement. And my favorite one was the toot toot method.
Yeah, that's nice.
That wasn't me, that was the phone. So if you're interested in the toot toot method, what you do is you pull up in a farmer's driveway, or not driveway, but their barnyard, and you have your arm hanging out the window, Delaney, right?
Uh-huh, okay.
And you got your cap, absolutely no curve in the bill. Like it's almost pitched up, and you give your customer two honks, and that's supposed to call him to your van so you can sell him something.
Oh, so he has to come to you.
The customer has to come to you. And Casey, he never used that strategy before. I couldn't believe it. And unfortunately for this salesman, it didn't work for him either. So I kind of had to poo-poo the toot-toot, as it were.
Yeah, that doesn't seem like a good method.
No, but it was pretty bad. It was pretty bad, Delaney.
I believe it. I'm looking forward to listening to that this afternoon.
Yeah, it's a barn burner, to say the least.
All right.
Co-host Landon, he had to go play softball on Wednesday. And so we had a meeting Tuesday, which was more important than his stupid softball game. So he just said, I'll just take the week off. So I had to dock his pay 100%.
Yeah. Oh, nice.
But so we had a pretty wild week here. But,
That's awesome.
The podcast, this podcast is it's coming around. It's coming around. Yeah,
it's fun. That's for sure.
Right, I love it. I love it.
Let's see. Well, Brent, I'm interested to get your thoughts on this because I know you're an opinionated guy, which is great. I love it. So we know FDA Commissioner Scott Gottlieb is leaving the FDA, but he said in a statement this week that the agency is going to continue to have public hearings and is going to figure out the final decision in labeling milk or milk products like almond milk or soy milk. They said that this is a very high priority for the overall nutrition program because they don't want people to get confused on the nutritional value of things like almond milk versus whole milk or skim milk. What's your thought on this, Brent?
Delaney, how stupid do you think that they think we are? I mean, they have got to think the American public is the dumbest amount of people in the world because can't you just don't they have the nutrition facts on the side of the almond milk carton?
I don't know. Or, I think that, but the question is, should you be able to be allowed to label it as milk if it's not coming from a milk-producing animal?
I mean, why not? I mean, if somebody's in the market for almond milk, you could call it almond orange juice for all I care. I mean, you know, what's the harm in calling it milk? I guess if you're a dairy guy, I mean,
yeah,
that's the people that may have a qualm with it. But that's the word of the day, by the way.
I like it. But, that's good.
I've been dying to get that into a conversation for like 3.5 months. I saw it on Jeopardy once, which I record, by the way. I don't want to hear anything about it. But anyway, yeah, you know, I mean, if I'm not a dairy farmer, I guess it really doesn't affect me. I can see how the dairy industry might have problems with somebody calling a product milk that is coming from a nut.
Mm-hmm. I think that's the issue here.
I mean, I guess my side is kind of got the libertarian versus
right.
You know, government intervention thing. Do you just leave it alone? You know, that's, you know, my kind of take on it. It's, what's the big, if you're not a dairy guy, I guess it's not a big deal, at least to me. If I'm a dairy guy and I see somebody calling it milk, I still don't know if it matters or not. I mean, do 98% of the country know what milk really is?
I don't know. I don't think so. I mean, you hear that story about, oh, some people think that chocolate milk comes from a brown cow. If they're thinking that, then they're definitely not going to know the difference between almond milk and regular milk, I don't think.
That's true. Unless, like, they have some undercover operation where they're harming almonds when they milk them. I don't know. something stupid like that. I guess that is true, Delaney. What, 98% of the country doesn't even think that we landed on the moon, so, you know.
Oh, my gosh. We don't even have time for that today. We just can't.
There's, what, 5% or something, maybe 10% of people don't even believe it that we landed on the moon, even though you can, you know, see stuff with a telescope.
Even. I can't even.
Yeah, start up the dark helicopters and the tinfoil hats, yeah.
Brent, please tell me that you have some good news, or maybe you have some fun news to share for today. Because the commodity markets are definitely not fun, but we have to talk about those.
Well, okay, so commodity market, I looked this up, and I was going to see when Children of the Corn came out, and if that had a negative impact on the market that year. So I did a little research, Delaney. Children of the Corn, have you seen it?
Yes.
1984. I was 3 years old, so I didn't see it. That was the start of the corn market break. The corn market broke, and it bottomed out, and I believe it was maybe 1986 at like sub $2 corn. And I put it all on Children of Corn. It's just like Oprah and that, what was it? It wasn't Mad Cow at that point. It was E. coli.
Oh,
and how she broke the market. So you got Oprah in the cattle market, that I'm not calling her a cow, and Children of the Corn in 1984 started the corn break. Don't you, what's your thoughts, Delaney? I got to hear it.
That sounds like a conspiracy theory, Brent.
Well, did the market not go down?
It probably did, but there are probably other factors to it.
Well, yeah, I mean, Maine, New Hampshire, and Vermont, they probably gained a whole lot of acres that year, too.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, for real. Okay. No, not for real. I don't want to sound that crazy. But, yeah, Children of the Corn definitely should be in the supply-demand reports, any anti-farm movies. It's always concerning to me. So, yeah, Children of the Corn, that's something you got to look at. If we want to shift a little away from agriculture just for a second.
Okay.
We're talking earlier about what kind of stories can we bring in? Because it's Fry-yay. I've never said that, but, you know, it's a thing now, and I love it. So I got on the Odd News, Fox News Odd News channel, stolen hot air balloon. What do you think the chase vehicle would be for a hot air balloon? Would it be like, I mean, you could chase one in like a cop, like a bicycle cop could chase a stolen hot air balloon. I mean, how do you get away with it, first of all? I mean,
with a hot air balloon and a bicycle? If you're chasing a hot air balloon with a bicycle, I think you probably need to be on like an airplane or something else.
Now, how fast do hot air balloons float?
Like, I don't know, but they're up in the air, and a bicycle's on the ground.
Yeah, I know, but, I mean, it's not like they're going to get out of your sight anytime soon,
oh,
are they?
True.
I mean, a hot air balloon – do I need to Google it? I'll Google it. Hot air balloon speed. I mean, I guarantee you it's not more than 10 miles an hour. I'm typing, and I'm going to look it up. This is the Ag News Daily Podcast. We are in – service right now and looking up stuff.
Mike and I do this all the time.
That is awesome. Okay, hot air balloon. You can get a hot air balloon from $144, no fee in a Phoenix. So the average – oh, damn. I guess I'm wrong. The average fastest recorded ground speed for a manned air balloon, 245 miles an hour.
Oh.
Boy, my research just went all to hell. Okay. See, I was thinking like, you know, because the Wizard of Oz, he didn't make a very fast getaway.
Right.
I mean, that was pretty slow. So, I don't know. I guess I'm completely off the reservation
cracked.
On this one.
Better
so, okay,
Busters
I guess
it.
A cop car. I guess
a cop car. Like Dukes of Hazzard style.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Got Bo and Luke up there trying to climb on that wicker basket they've got there.
Oh,
so, yeah. But no, so, this, yeah, somebody stole a hot air balloon, and this is in the Northeast somewhere, and, I mean, obviously it got found. I mean, it's a hot air balloon. How are you going to hide a hot air balloon? So it probably landed in some, you know, New Hampshire cornfield, and they tried to stow it away in some silo, you know, where they hold 50 to 100 bushels. So that's another, you know, corn-related story that I like to get across here.
All right. I like it because it landed in – or they found it in a cornfield.
They did. And, you know, I don't know if it was a Grand Theft Auto or, you know, really what it was. But nonetheless, to say the dude got some time. But if we're talking more I'm getting into haunted farms now.
Hmm.
And, of course, the Children of the Corn deal, that was obviously a fictional deal. But if we go to the old Arnold estate, and there are always estates that get haunted. And this is in Harrisville, Rhode Island. The advice from the people that live there, leave the lights on at night. And do I need to cite this, Delaney? This is modernfarmer.com.
Is that like a Wikipedia type of
no,
site?
No, it's
okay.
Cool.
All right.
World's Haunted Farms. The quote is, leave the lights on at night was the advice from the Perrone family. That's the advice that the Perrone family got when they moved into an old farmhouse in the winter of 1970. So this is before Children of the Corn. Anyway, this story is what The Conjuring, the movie, was based on.
Hmm.
Eight generations of families had lived and died in the house, and few seemed to have moved on, leaving the place packed with spirits. So, I mean, who's – you know, I want to meet the realtor of this place. And is it the same realtor that's selling it to each of the families that live and die there? I mean, he's not selling it to the family that died there. He already sold it to them. The people – that bought it from the people that died. Like, after, like, that's kind of like the guy that gets married seven times. I mean, who? This guy's got to have a Facebook page packed with exes. And, you know, any lady that's going to get married to a guy that's been married seven times is going to check his Facebook page. So, I don't know. Maybe it doesn't have anything to do with one or the other. But according to town records, three people committed suicide at the house, two hung themselves, and one chose poison. There were also two people drowned and four frozen to death. And to round out the horror, this is terrible, an 11-year-old girl was assaulted and murdered by a farmhand. And this is all written about in an account called House of Darkness, House of Light. Have you ever wanted to, Delaney, or ever looking forward to maybe staying a night in a haunted house somewhere?
Yes. So there's a house in southwest Iowa called the Axe Murder House in Villisca. I totally would
like
stay there.
B&B or what?
No, but you can, like, rent the house to stay there for a night. And supposedly it's haunted and all that stuff.
So is it like Dwight Schrute Beet Farms Bed and Breakfast?
No.
That would be awesome. They have an
no.
irrigation room.
Yeah.
So awesome. So it's a pretty popular site then.
I mean, there's like a documentary on it and everything.
I'm going to have to check that out. Mm-hmm. We don't have – now, my parents' house, and I didn't know this till I was – and I never saw anything – but apparently a guy died of a heart attack, I don't know, back in the 50s in our kitchen table.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, we haven't had any steak knives or anything move without, you know, somebody holding it.
Mm-hmm.
But to go on about this farm, the most dreadful ghost is Bathsheba Sherman. You know, I thought she was back in, like, biblical times. But nonetheless, this is – I guess there's two Bathshebas. A rumored Satanist who hung herself from a tree behind the barn in the early 19th century. Her mother told a reporter from the Providence Journal in 77 that she woke up to find the head of an old woman shouting, get out, I'll drive you out with death and gloom. I mean, at least she rhymes. I mean, that's pretty good right, just on its own merit. But attacks from Bathsheba got more intense. One of the Perrone girls once found her leg bleeding from a large puncture and was allegedly possessed by the spirit. They got a priest to perform an exorcism more than once. It helped, but only for a short while. So maybe it was like a guy that doesn't take all his antibiotics. He only quits when he's like when he starts feeling good. So he gets like, is he like exorcism resistant? He's exorcism resistant, Delaney. So
like antibiotic resistant. That's nice.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, if you're Roundup resistant, dicamba resistant, exorcism resistant is always something you got to watch out for in these things.
Brent, I think this is the first time we've ever had haunted farm related news.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm here for. I mean, if Mike's away, I mean, come on now. It's but yeah, so always take all of your antibiotics until it's expired, or not till it's expired, till the bottle's empty, and always let your priest finish the exorcism.
Oh, that's great. Thank you for that. I hope people enjoy that part of today's news.
We need the More You Know jingle from NBC.
Oh, there you go.
That would be great. It's
lovely. Well, Brent, I think we're going to skip an interview for today. We've got a lot of content that we've covered during today's podcast. I just had a couple other quick pieces of news. The first is we've seen some good signs in the wheat markets. We saw Egypt and Iraq buy wheat for Thursday. They each announced some flash sales there of over 100,000 metric tons. Usually they get rice from, or they get wheat from Russia because of obviously geographic location, but now we're looking like we're going to eat up some of that lion's share this year. So I think that's good news for wheat producers.
You know, anything and everything to get the wheat out of here, because I think wheat basis down in our area is about 45 under, and that's putting, I didn't see how wheat closed today, but it's pretty dreary. Look out.
Yeah, wheat hasn't had really great closes lately. Not a great close again today.
Yeah, 4.4 million bushels of soft red winter for delivery to Egypt. That's a pretty good little bite off there.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Brent, before I do the commodity markets for today, tell us a little bit about your podcast, the Dryline Farmer Podcast, and how folks can listen to it.
Dryline Farmer Podcast is kind of what you're hearing right now. It's just a whole bunch of nonsense that doesn't make any sense at all. That's what nonsense is. But, we were on a regular schedule of dropping on Wednesdays until our co-host had softball, and we have to push it a little bit around. So our podcast drops during the week is what it does. And so whenever we can get to it. But we started off talking farm, but now we're kind of all over the place. And we just like to, I mean, you know, farmers talk farm all the time. And, you know, we try to fit a farm story in there if we find something that we can talk about. But we're kind of all over the place. And, of course, we're on the Global Ag Network, and we're really excited to be a part of that. And, like I said, it's myself, and Landon Nolan is my co-host with me. And we just talk about or ridicule events of the day. We talked about March Madness last week. We're talking I actually had Casey Seymour on this week, and we talked sales strategies. And it's not like a seminar sales strategy thing. This is completely ridiculous stuff. We talk everything from sales strategies. I believe we talked some religion. Hmm. It was, different denominations of Christians. And we go off the rails. But if you want something different, if you want something that you don't expect to hear, you know, you wouldn't think anybody would say it, that's what you want to listen to, and that's what we're all about. So, yeah, awesome. We're excited. We're having a good time doing it.
Awesome. Well, it's definitely not for people that are faint of heart, and if you're offended easily about politically incorrect things, probably don't listen to the Dryline Farmer Podcast, but that's just my
opinion. We're an equal opportunity. Yeah.
Awesome. Brent, let's look at the commodity market closes, unfortunately, for today. Before we wrap this thing up, saving the worst news for last. So, folks, if you want to turn it off because you've already seen the markets today, this would be your time. Of course, our commodity markets are sponsored by our partners at the Zahner Group. Today is one of those days where you wish you probably had a marketing strategy in place. If you don't already, give them a call today at 312-277-0050. Okay, ripping the Band-Aid off first here with the corn market. The May corn contract dropped 17.5 cents today at 356¾. The December closing 13.5 cents lower, hitting that low, or actually below that low of 384¾. So soybean pits not spared on today either. The May contract down 5 1/4 cents at 8.84 1/4. The November losing 4 3/4 cents at 9.19 even. The Egyptian and Iraqi wheat purchases was not enough to spark excitement in the wheat markets for today as the May contract dropped 6 3/4 cents at 4.57 3/4. The December down 8.5 at 4.84 3/4. In the livestock pits, the April live cattle contract down 82.5 cents at 125.70. The June down 62.5 cents to close at 119 even. In the feeder cattle pits, the redness continues in the April contract, losing 70 cents on the day at 145.25. The May down 90 at 148.77.5. And finally, in the lean hog pits, $1.50 down in the April contract to close at 77.37. The May cut $2.35 to end at 81.32.5. Brent, those were not pretty commodity markets. Do you have anything that you can share with our listeners before we let them go to leave this Friday episode on a little more upbeat news?
Well, I was going to try to tell you that orange juice was up today, but it was not. It was down $3.90. Is that a frozen metric ton? I can't remember. But hopefully the best piece of optimism I can get is I know that the flooded areas will drain and they will dry up. And we're all in our prayers that way, and we just hope everybody up there can get out from underwater and start farming again. But we're all real fortunate down here that we've had droughts year in and year out, but I've always seen that a flood is always worse than a drought. So we just think about those folks up there and hope they can really get through this and start a new planting season.
Absolutely, absolutely, Brent. One more time before I let you go, how can folks interact with you on Twitter?
That's at Trader Brent. That's where you're going to find me and the Dryline Farmer podcast. And don't forget Landon Nolan. That's NoTwitLandon44. He'll retweet that podcast link. And we're also on Facebook, and the podcast is disseminated out through the Global Ag Network, and they send it through iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, SoundCloud, anything and everything that's got a .com attached to it.
Awesome. Same goes for the Ag News Daily podcast, folks. You can hit us up also on Facebook and on Twitter at Ag News Daily. Brent, thanks so much for co-hosting with me today. Should we let the people go?
I guess so. Let's let them go.